Rick Emerson radio program. You know the great thing about that legal ID that you played? It's because it's got Bender. Not enough Bender on this station. Sarah Dillon.
Yes.
What is Bender's full name? Go. Oh, you can't help the geek help you. Oh, cheater.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I know the show. I don't know his full name.
Bender Bending Rodriguez.
That's his full name.
Bender Bending Rodriguez. Because he was made in Mexico. Totally true. There you go.
Huh.
Yeah! Eat that! It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. I'm sorry, I said this flashback to last night. Never mind. I don't have time. I don't have time to get into it now. Anyway, and so forth. In just a moment here, we'll begin the AM 970 noon news hour.
What are all these people calling about? Are we off the air?
How sad. People are calling and interested in our program. Are we inadvertently broadcasting in Spanish? That's it. We assume that there's something wrong. No, I think there's people calling about the internet is a series of tubes. Because I've seen the trend, but it looks like it might not have been George Bush. It looks like it might have been a senator from somewhere who said it. Steve, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Emerson.
How can I help you?
I have to respectfully disagree with you about George Bush being the person that talked about the internet as a series of tubes. My recollection is pretty specific from a couple of months ago. It was Senator Stevens of Alaska.
Okay,
he's
all right.
The guy who wanted to build a bridge to nowhere.
Right. But people get now. I don't want to get bogged down on this, but the bridge to nowhere isn't really a bridge to nowhere. Isn't it a bridge that goes to where hundreds of people live?
Well, yes, but it only services Alaska Airlines.
They're not really a state
beneficiary of that.
Okay.
So he's on some technology subcommittee, which is like having the... They referred to the internet as a series of tubes, and that's where that came from.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, well, I take it back. It was not George Bush. It was Senator Steve... What's his guts? What's his name?
Stevens of Alaska.
Senator Stevens of Alaska. So if anybody can find audio of that, God love you. I'd be your friend for life. All right, thank you, sir.
All right, bye.
All right, and finally... Don, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
I can tell by your disdain that you were expecting at least one phone call about this.
Well, it's just one of those...
I know this isn't like the McGlare Report or anything intelligent, but...
The answer is 12. All right. Yes.
But, you know, my question is, and I would pose this to anybody, is why do we even have a minimum wage? What's the freaking purpose? You know, wouldn't the market... I know this has been argued 1,000 times, but... Nobody can live on $5 an hour, so why is there one?
You know, are you asking why there is one or why it's $5?
Well, no, I mean, well, rhetorically, probably both. You know?
Seriously, look, here's the thing, is there are people out there who are, do you agree that there are people who are paid $5 an hour?
Okay.
Hold on, I want to ask you a couple questions, I'm not trying to be a jerk. Okay, so do you agree... As I think Lisa Goddard says, the every study would bear out, you can't really live on $5 an hour.
No. And I totally, you know what? But if you are over the age of 16,
right,
living and working for minimum wage, you've made a serious error somewhere along the path.
Well, we can argue that. My point is, though, you say, why is there a need for a minimum wage?
Right.
When you say the market will sort of take care of that wage, well, if we all agree that $5 you can't live on, and then if you further agree that there are people paying that, then clearly the market doesn't take care of it. Because somebody who's paying $5 would pay $4 if they could.
There's a big giant country to ourselves full of people who will do that.
Yeah.
What about the state of Oregon?
I'm sorry?
State of Oregon, it's illegal to pay $5 an hour.
Well, that's all well and good, but I'm saying the fact that there's a minimum wage of $5 and the fact that there are people paying that indicates that the market doesn't just naturally increase the wage everywhere. You know what I mean?
But why would they if there's already a marker in place?
Oh, what does a tumor feel like? I'm just saying...
This is just one of those back-and-forth things.
This is
really not going to resolve.
Really, no, this is just...
I don't mean to...
Here's the thing, because...
No, it's okay. I mean, you guys have both made your points. Maybe we should just leave the news.
That's suddenly coming in like John McLaughlin.
Seriously, everyone has their opinions, but we can't do anything about it.
Don, can we all agree that we'd like to see Scarlett Johansson nude?
Of course.
God bless you, sir.
On a quick note...
Yes.
The Wii will fail. The Wii video game system will fail.
Oh, okay. See, that Wii is just such a funny and weird word. Oh, wait, now, and why do you believe that?
Because it's not in 1080. There's no HD.
Is it true, and then I swear to God we'll end this call, is it true, no offense, is it true that to get a PS3 that is pointless if I don't have an HD TV?
pointless. Same with the 360.
All right.
Don't buy it unless you have an HD TV. Completely pointless.
All right. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All right. There you go.
Well, you punch the little buttons and things.
I can show you how to do it.
No, thanks.
All right. 503-733-2970. Let's now begin the reason you are here today, ladies and gentlemen. Tim Riley, the ministry.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio.
You give me an up cue.
And the Ministry of Truth. This is Tim Riley.
Wow, we're really early today.
And by early, you mean... The best part is that we're actually late, and yet, relatively speaking, it is still drastically early.
I just warmed up my soup, thinking we were on the old schedule.
Oh, no.
And doubled it down to about 20 seconds.
Yes.
Well, what can you do? Attorney Gloria Allred is asking the California Attorney General's Office to take legal action against the producers of the movie Borat. He's a big attention whore anyway. She says that producers tricked her client into appearing in the film. She said Cindy Street thought she would be appearing in a documentary on dinner party etiquette, not an R-rated movie containing scenes she described as pornographic and horrifying.
Ms. Street had no idea that she, her business, and certain individuals who were invited to participate in a dinner party were to appear in a major motion picture, or that they would be subjected to ridicule and humiliation.
Now, is Cindy Street, is she the woman who is sitting with him at the table in those cutaway scenes where she's saying, and do I ask the people about, you know, whatever, their butts or whatever, and she says, well, perhaps not, or is she one of the people at
I'm
the dinner party?
Sure. Which one she is.
Okay, if anybody knows who Cindy Street is, because there's two, because we're talking about two different things here in this, in Borat. There's, and again, I'm not going to give anything away, really, but there's a sequence where he sits down with a woman who is like a Miss Manners. She's like an etiquette coach. And he's asking, how did you behave? I'm doing it. How did you behave at the dinner party? My name is Luigi. How to behave at a dinner party. And then there are actually the people at the dinner party with him. And man, I gotta tell you, he says some things at that dinner party that just, your head just turns inside out. It's so vile and great. So I'd be curious to know, because the etiquette coach woman, she got treated pretty fairly. The people at the dinner table, I think, didn't quite know what they were in for, but it is genius, though.
And the second biggest story today, Sony launched its highly anticipated PlayStation 3 video game console. Here's what it sounded like when people rushed to the store early this morning in San Jose.
There you go.
None of us get laid. All right. There you go. And by just to duck back on Gloria Allred for a second, you know, is there a more hideous, unlikable woman on planet Earth than Gloria Allred?
Ann Coulter.
I don't know. I really don't. I mean, push come to shove, I honestly don't know who the more irritating of the two is. I mean, Gloria, it doesn't help, by the way, that she does that. Ladies, can we have a conference about this? Right? Quit shaving your eyebrows and painting them back on with a stick. That looks retarded. Why would you do that? Where was I at the other day? I was at Best Buy the other day. I was at Best Buy, long story short, when I was in Seattle for the medical hair thing, I left my the charging thing for my MP3 player. I had to go buy a power cord, blah, blah, blah. I'm at Best Buy, and there's some 17-year-old girl comes up to help me, and those Best Buy uniforms are not flattering to anybody, especially not if you were a very, very corpulent 17-year-old girl. And just a whole lot of, like, where you get the, what do you call that? The rollover, where it's like there's the belt line, and then there's the stomach, and one can't quite hold back the other. And so it's a lot of... And then she comes up and she's talking to me, and she's done this thing, and would someone please explain this to me, where she has just shaved the eyebrows clean off and then painted them back on with a pencil. It really does make you look like a cancer victim or maybe one of those Barbie heads from the 70s where, like, you styled the hair yourself. Gloria Allred's got that. Just a hideous, awful, screechy, terrible woman. Although I do have to say that really, if I had to be represented by somebody in a case like this, I might actually get her, because it seems like she gets things done. And you, Tim Riley, are right about the guy, Sasha Cohen,
mm-hmm.
who you would think that Gloria Allred, of all people, would know not to sue him, because all it is more publicity. That's half the reason I was like, I got to see it, because everybody's suing him.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, anyway, so there you go. And by the way, everybody can shut their hole, because I saw the release that people signed to be in the movie, and they got paid.
Yep.
Here's the thing. If you don't want to run the risk of looking bad in a movie, don't agree to be in a film where you sign a release giving up any and all rights over how you are depicted and what context your appearance is put in. That'll solve that problem. So, there you go.
We now take you to Florida.
Oh, oh, oh! No, no, no. That's me! Yeah!
My thing was down. I got it first, though.
I am in the zone, baby. All right, it's Tim Riley.
Getting the Sony PlayStation 3 proved to be impossible for one man, since he couldn't avoid getting arrested. 23-year-old Joey Iglesias stood in the line outside of Best Buy in Hialeah. He was arrested by police after what was said... he refused to back up when police told him to. Witness Cade Thompson describes a different story. Number three.
And Joey said, why? No one else is backing up. Why should I move out?
Yeah.
So he said, oh, you want to get smart with me, son? So he said, can I get your name and your badge number? He said, okay, you want to be like that? He grabbed him by his arm quite forcibly, I may add, and put him in the cop car, removed all his wallet, everything from his pocket.
She had me until about halfway through. And then it was just pops and buzzes.
And Joey said, why? No one else is backing up. Why should I move out? So then he said,
and then
oh,
I said,
you want to get smart with me, son? So he said, can I get your name and your badge number? He said, okay, you want to be like that? He grabbed him by his arm quite forcibly, I may add, and put him in the cop car, removed all his wallet, everything from his pocket.
All right, whatever. And so this is where? This is in Florida. Listen, Florida. Place. Well, I think Ed McCarthy, we'll talk to him like 1 o'clock or so. We got Ed McCarthy. He's standing outside some the Best Buy or something. And I am calling a little bit of shenanigans on this PS3 thing, because does anybody even know anybody who's buying one?
No.
Hey, there's a geek. Hey, engineer, is there, yeah, I know, but it's funnier if I just say geek, because then it's like, then the whole department becomes a character. Do you know anybody buying a PS3?
No.
No, see, nobody's, because you gotta buy all of the, I'm sorry, I spoke too soon here. Scotty J says, my brother waited in line at Fred Meyer this morning. God, that's one weird family.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to go
that open at midnight?
Is that going to go right next to $15,000 fish tank and next to the assless chaps? All right. here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, a 21-year-old man waiting in line to purchase a PlayStation 3 at a Putnam, Connecticut Walmart was shot during a robbery attempt. Lieutenant Band said the incident unfolded around 3:15 this morning.
15 to 20 people waiting in line outside of the store were confronted by two armed male suspects. The armed suspects demanded money from the waiting patrons. One of the male patrons confronted the armed suspects and was shot. Both suspects then fled on foot.
And that's supposed to be a safe white state.
You know what?
It's just gone too far when this is happening in white communities.
If you're going to rob somebody and you know that there are these geeks standing in the middle of the night with nobody guarding them with the pockets full of cash to buy this stuff, I mean, they seem like sitting ducks.
I suppose, I guess, except that, here's the thing, don't you assume they all have cameras and cell phones and they're all trioing the cops and so forth? And
they might have been afraid.
Just cowering. I don't have my boots of escape. And so forth. I was going to make some other observation. Oh, and the escaping on foot, I don't understand.
Mm.
I mean, really, how hard is it? You're going to steal, what is it? If you're going to steal a bunch of geeks, why don't you steal a car? Not that I'm telling thieves to steal cars. Let's stop here and let me just reset for a moment. I'm simply saying, this is like Don and Mike talking about how to make meth last night. I'm simply observing that if one is going to engage in any sort of activity where one might need to get away quickly, it seems prudent to just, have a car handy. So, steal one. Do it now. Here's Tim Riley.
The policeman describes the weapons used.
Oh, that's me.
It's believed that at this time the information is that the victim was shot with the shotgun.
Oh! And suddenly the story's less funny. Well, okay. Unless it was in the Nads. Here's Scott. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah, before I left work about 20 minutes ago, they were selling on eBay the PS3s for almost $3,000.
Why am I being sucked into talking about something I don't even care about? I don't own a PlayStation 3. I'm not going to own a PlayStation 3.
I'm not either. It's absurd.
And it's not either I'm opposed to video games. I'll buy an Xbox 360 when Halo 3 comes out. I've admitted that. Although, as I now understand, that's going to require me to buy a goddamn new high-definition television.
You can't go wrong there.
Well, I suppose, but I... I love America.
And a Lexus would be nice.
Also, I need a grill. What's my point? Yeah, but I'm just not a PlayStation guy. I'm an Xbox guy and so forth. But I'm being sucked into talking about this thing. I've just become part of Sony's little media charade here. But my thing is, I was to understand that they eBay was only letting licensed PlayStations be sold online, and that therefore it was impossible to be scalping them online.
You just go on to eBay and do a quick PS3 search and just look at them. It's amazing.
All right, so there you go. And at what, three grand?
PS3, about $3,000 is what they're selling for.
All right. There you go. Thank you, sir. All right. Here we go. President Rick, while I agree that President Bush is dumb as a box of hair, he was not the one who said the Internet was a series of tubes. It was Senator Ted Stevens. Here is the full clip. Okay, so we'll play this later. Don't let me forget about this. This is a clip of Ted Stevens. Apparently, he says several other retarded things in this clip as well, where he refers to the Internet as a series of tubes. Here, though, is Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Well, speaking of the president, maybe at this point we should do a Bush watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, your Bush watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson Show.
He's the president in residence. He's kind of in charge. He's got the whole country saying, that's my Bush. Life is hard. That's the price of fame. When you're president, everyone knows your name. Hey, what's that there? It's my Bush. I can't believe he's actually in the White House. That's our man. That's my Bush.
It's hard to believe that Karl Rove would put this trip to Vietnam together. I mean, just the reason for being there and the words said during this visit.
Who takes a trip to Vietnam? What could possibly be there that we need to see?
The president is using his visit to Vietnam and U.S. history in Southeast Asia to put a positive spin on the current situation in Iraq.
These Mexican whores are all worn out. Can we go to Vietnam?
Now, speaking in Hanoi, Bush said his trip to the communist country nearly 30 years after the war that split America in two, and, well, we lost, is proof the two countries can move beyond difficulties. With the United States embroiled in a bitter conflict in Iraq, Bush said the experience in Vietnam shows a Middle Eastern country can heal in time.
The task in Iraq is going to take a while.
Is it possible that Karl Rove has had a stroke or something?
Somebody mixed up his plane ticket.
No, I meant... there's a, what sounds like Vietnam? I meant to go to Nguyen Rom. No, I don't know what the joke is. There's something there about... I said Elise from that old fax commercial. Here's my thing about Karl Rove. Is it A... Man, I saw the greatest interview with him the other day. Somebody sent me an interview, and it was him like 3 days before the midterm election, him going, well, the Republicans are going to pick up 14 seats, and we'll firmly keep control of both houses. And then it was just, oh, bam, right in the junk. So A, he bungles the midterm election. B, and it's just, I never get tired of looking at that photograph of him looking at his BlackBerry as the message comes in, like, you are effed. You know, it's just sort of dope.
It's almost like the one K-Fed when Britney sent him that message during
now,
the TV special.
Do we have that? Is that a thing that we have? Did you post that, Sarah, on your site?
I did, but it's kind of lost in, like, it's a four-minute YouTube thing. It's a few minutes in.
You should time flag it. You should be like, skip ahead to 2:14 or whatever. Because that's what everybody wants to see. It's just the moment when everybody, how great to be able to say that, I saw the moment when K-Fed's life crumbled into ash. But the thing about Karl Rove is, so he bungles the midterms, and then what? Why in the name of God? Would you be talking about Iraq while in Vietnam?
They didn't put him inside a tank.
with those huge goggles. Uh-huh. Fantastic.
Or having lunch at the Hanoi Hilton.
I just don't understand. I mean, why? Somebody needs to be overseeing the overseer at this point. Because if there's really one place you wouldn't want George Bush standing talking about Iraq, it would seem to be Vietnam. Maybe this is a thing where it's like opposite, where he's trying to make it look so bad that it somehow looks brave and good. I don't know. All right.
The president says in the end, those who want to live in peace will be victorious.
And that Iraq is a part of the struggle, and it's just going to take a long period of time for the ideology that is hopeful, and that is an ideology of freedom, to overcome an ideology of hate.
But that's the communist country. Yes, yes. We lost.
It's a one-party system.
Seriously.
There are billboards to the glorious leader, and that's about it.
Hey, what's the weather going to be like? Our leader will make it a glorious sunny day. That is all. Do you suppose somebody told him that we won in Vietnam? Is that it? Is he just...
They could be.
Does he think we're 11-1 and that's why he's standing there? Well, all right, there you go. George Bush in Vietnam talking about Iraq. It really is too perfect. Believe me when I say that I really don't want to take this call, but I'm going to do it so we can move past it. No offense. Justin, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
What's up, brother?
What do you got?
Yesterday I couldn't call in for the worst smell ever.
Okay.
So,
yes.
I had to tell you my worst smell ever.
Okay, you had to.
And you'll appreciate it.
All right.
One day I was in my garage with a couple buddies of mine playing some music and whatnot. My neighbor knocks on my garage door and says, "Hey, have you seen our neighbor?" Who's like a 5 foot tall, you know, old lady. "No, I haven't. Why?" "There's like 20-something papers stacked outside of her place."
Oh.
So we go knock on the door and we hear a dog barking.
Oh.
We did not know that this woman had a dog.
Oh.
She was kind of one of those weird, you know, reclusive ladies.
Yes.
So we get the police out there. And they crack the window open, and we get... Because she also had two cats that we did not know about.
Is this going to be the smell of fermented Gladys?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily... I'd use mummifying Gladys. Because that's what the cops said. She had begun to mummify. And you remember Close Encounters of the Third Kind when Richard Dreyfuss has the garbage in his house building the "this means something"?
I do.
Okay, this is what her living room looked like. But about twice as bad. It was pretty gnarly. And I look in there and I grab this dog because, you know, I felt bad for the dog.
Right, and then there's the corpse and the so forth.
And the feces and everything else.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
You know, it's...
Apparently we couldn't smell it next door because she had so much garbage in her house, it was absorbing the smell, and the cops couldn't even get to the door.
Okay. And, here's the best thing about this call, is that you didn't feel your life could go on until you shared that with us. And I do mean that in the best possible way.
Oh, dude, I'm sitting here eating some pizza at work, you know, enjoying my lunch. And I figured since my lunch was disturbed slightly yesterday, I had to do it to everybody else.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Justin.
Hallelujah.
All right. There you go. That's it. Justin, ladies and gentlemen, I always wonder about, and please, let's not spend a lot of time talking about this, but I always wonder about people who are mummified. And I don't mean like Ramses II or whatever his name was. I mean like just some guy. Like this woman, whatever her name is, Ethel. We walked in and she was all mummified. I thought mummification, it took like a... I thought you had to be wrapped in a thing and then they had to inject you with some crap. And then there was some gauze. And then they had to powder you with something. I thought that it was a lot of work. It didn't seem like it was a thing you could just sort of do. Having mummification just sort of happen randomly would... To me, that's like leaving a glass of water on the counter and you come back in a year and it's beer. It just doesn't make any sense.
I don't think they'll do that at a funeral home anymore. Make you into a mummy.
No, now, I know a woman. Clyde, well, she wasn't mummified. Clyde and I know a woman. She was... Well, no, I mean, actually, she... Clyde and I know actually two people. We knew... well, I'll just say her first name is Kay. But we knew a woman who was... She's one of those freeze me when I die types.
Mm-hmm.
She had the cancer, and then the dying, and the oh, I'm dead. And then they froze her. And so that she's in some place, because Utah's full of crackpot religions, not surprisingly. And she's sitting in a tank somewhere, just like in a big ice cube. And then there is a guy, I swear to God, his name, it's like half retard, half Egyptian. His name is Corky Ra. And Corky Ra runs a church. It is, and Clyde can tell you all about him, runs a sort of weird... It's like a modern-day cult, but it's sort of shot through with a bunch of Egyptian iconography and so forth. And I swear to God, he had, like, he will mummify you. And he found, and the way that it's legal is, it's a solid, single, no-seam metal casing that he'll put you in when you die. And there is a place in Salt Lake that when you die, you, your loved one, your cats, your whatever, you can all be mummified and put inside, like, a big metal sarcophagus. There you go. So you can mummify people, Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, Oregon's own rubber band man thinks he's broken the world record for having the biggest rubber ball in the world. This rubber band ball is over 500 pounds. He's Steve Milton of Eugene. He's created the 3,300-pound ball comprised of rubber bands. His creation stands 5 feet tall. It takes up half his two-car garage. And while it isn't official, the 26-year-old man believes he's broken the record for the heaviest elastic band ball, eclipsing John Bain's mark of 3,120 pounds. His new sponsor, OfficeMax, has agreed to transport the giant ball to Chicago for an official weigh-in.
How big is it?
How big is it? It's 3,300 pounds. It's over 5 feet tall and takes up half his two-car garage.
You know, like, when we were talking about the O.J. Simpson trial, how I said my teacher let us, you know, watch it or anything, my psychology teacher, Mr. Reed, he actually was a runner-up for having the biggest rubber band ball in the world.
But I don't
he
know.
Would bring it to class. He'd roll it in class.
I don't... I guess the ladies. Okay. A, where would you keep it? Because how would you... Like, where would you store a 3,000-pound rubber band ball?
He said in the garage.
In the garage.
Oh, that makes sense. Then I guess you have to roll it right into your truck or whatever. Mm. Okay, here's what I don't understand, is that how... I mean, it gets to a certain point, and then the rubber bands are not big enough to go around it anymore.
I'm not sure the construction material she used to hold it together.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. It's like if it's... Look, if it's the size of an egg, mm-hmm. yeah, you just wrap more rubber bands around it. When it gets to the size of a soccer ball... It's too big for the rubber bands to wrap around.
Maybe do the jelly bracelet linking thing.
Oh, I bet that is what it is. You link them together end to end, and then you wrap it around that way. That doubles your thickness, too. Good thinking, Sarah Dillon. All right, there you go. We should... Oh, you know what we should do on the show?
What's
we
that?
Should... This is a great idea. And by great, I mean retarded. We should create the world's largest or the world's blankiest blank.
Huh?
maybe that was unnecessarily vague. No, that's it. What a great retarded kooky radio stunt. Not the world's largest ball of twine. Not the world's largest ball of rubber bands. Not the world's most paper clips or whatever. What could we get a lot of and accumulate in one place or in a thing that we could then alert the media to? Something really great and stupid. The world's largest blank
and then
is
we can
blank.
Get some shameless self-promotion.
Oh, no.
If we don't have any money to promote, we could do that. We could do something really
stupid.
Ridiculous, and then get on all the news shows and everyone will know about us.
What could we get? The world's largest blank of blank. So it's the world.
We should get a Guinness Book of World Records and go through it on the air and try and figure out what would be possible for us to do.
Totally, because there's like world's largest ball of twine. But this wouldn't be ball of twine. It would be the world's largest blank of blank. Think about it now, everybody. Let's do one more, and then we'll break. We'll come back with more from the Ministry of Truth.
Well, Tina Fey was fantastic on a national radio program this morning discussing former SNL hosts. Tina said the hosts are usually great, but every couple of years you get a bad one, like Paris Hilton, who was a piece of blank.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Tina didn't hold back on how much she and the cast hated Paris. Some of the more hilarious moments include, as she said, Paris had the hair of a fraggle and left nasty wads of Barbie hair on the floor from her cheap weave. Tina caught Paris's giant man hands and said they were as long as her forearm. Paris actually takes herself seriously and embraces her stupidity. She asked them to write a skit so she could play Jessica Simpson, quote, because I hate her and she's fat, unquote. Paris is so uninterested in anything else, the staff had a bet to see if she would ask anybody something personal like, how are you? She did at one point ask someone, is Meyer Randolph Italian? She's half black, half Jewish. She told a national disc jockey, Paris was a nightmare. She took herself super seriously, wouldn't let anybody poke fun at her at all. Tina then attacked Paris's look, saying, strands of her gross Barbie hair were found all over the set. Jesus. Close up, she actually looks like a transvestite.
Jesus Christ.
The 30 Rock star also said that when Paris became frustrated with the show's writers, she would lock herself away in her dressing room.
Oh, that's fantastic. She has fraggle hair and man hands. I said...
And she looks like a tranny.
And I am proud that I was on the Paris Hilton is an ugly whore thing years and years and years ago. When nobody else... I'm just going to say this. When nobody else really even knew who she was.
I always knew, though. I knew from the Shannon Doherty bar fighting days.
Well, you're a gossip monger, though, the way that most people aren't. No, and I mean that in a good way. You consume celebrity gossip the way that, I mean, even more than we do. But Richard Nunn, I remember, God, and I think it's when she was still like 12 and or whatever, oh. You know, because he's Richard Nunn. Being at Trey's house playing poker one night, and Richard Nunn is there. And Richard Nunn, by the way, was the weatherman for the WB. Richard Nunn actually appearing in Trey's kitchen, clutching a copy that looked to be sort of wrinkled, of Teen People. Walking through with a cop. No, seriously. He had a bottle of Jägermeister in one hand and a copy of Teen People in the other. And he's like, look at my date for the night. And I'm like, what do you think? It's Paris Hilton. And I had no idea who she was. And he's just like, she's some rich chick. And my first comment was that she looked like a duck. So there you go. Paris Hilton, her bad weave. Fantastic. All right, let's break here. We'll come back. We have more for the Ministry of... Fraggle humor really is the way to my heart. We have more from the Ministry of Truth around the corner. Coming up at 1, we have Ed McCarthy. Later on, we have Jim Roop. Scott Daly will be here as well. And why you should never light anything in your buttocks. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Rick, how about largest ball of useless facts? Rick?
That's you.
Okay, I can't let this take over the news hour, but I have to say, reading a couple of these, we're saying that here on the Rick Emerson Show, we need to start making the world's largest blank of blank. That's the way to notoriety and fame. Rick, largest ball of vacuum belts. Largest ball of hemp. Largest ball of chains. Here's one. Largest ball of other balls. Largest ball made out of a lot of really small balls. No, like a thing with the... Here's Tim Riley. And so forth.
Well, one of Tom Cruise's ex-wives has reportedly offered her well wishes for his upcoming wedding. According to People magazine, Nicole Kidman said the present to Cruise and his bride-to-be Katie Holmes. While sources won't reveal what the gift was, they say that Nicole attached a note that wished the couple, quote, a lifetime of happiness together.
One of Nicole's personal assistants attached a note that said, yeah.
Kidman and Cruise were married for nearly 10 years and adopted two children during that time together because he couldn't conceive. Prior to that, Cruise was married to actress Mimi Rogers. Cruise and Holmes are reportedly tying it on in a castle outside Rome.
A castle? Really? Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. Is that not? Do they not have any natural children? Is it all? They're all like from the store.
They adopted two kids.
Do he and Mimi Rogers have any kids?
Wasn't she
like 100 when they got married anyway? Tom Cruise and Mimi Rogers? I mean, she's like that. That's like he really is. See, here's the thing about Tom Cruise. I was thinking about this. He really is the living stereotype, though, because he, when he was young, he married, and she wasn't like double his age, but when he was young, he married Mimi Rogers, and she was, I think, relatively speaking, much older than he was. And then when he was, when he married Nicole Kidman, they were about the same age. Now that he's like a 44-year-old guy, suddenly he's marrying like the child bride. So pretty soon, so the next thing you know, he's going to be like 75, and he'll be marrying, you know, Anna Nicole Smith or something. So that's, that guy is just, man, that guy's living the stereotype.
Former Bond girl Jane Seymour is backing the newest actor to play the fictional super spy James Bond, 007. The actress who starred in the 1973 Live and Let Die motion picture opposite Roger Moore says casino... Oh, this is A, by the way.
I've got it.
Okay, says star Daniel Craig will survive any early criticism.
Any change is always criticized. I mean, I was criticized for years for being a Bond girl. That by doing that, I was basically meant that I wasn't a very good actress. And then it was the whole big deal was that I survived being a Bond girl.
And this is
she
who?
Sounds old.
Who is
Jane Seymour?
That didn't even sound like her.
No.
Any change is always criticized. I mean, I was criticized for years for being a Bond.
Jane Seymour, Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she does. That didn't even sound like her.
Sounds like some bad medicine for her. She says she knows her James Bond, Roger Moore, well, but also has a connection to several others who have played the role.
He's the one I know, although I do play golf at the same golf club as Sean Connery. I bump into him from time to time. And Pierce Brosnan's a very good friend of mine. I probably know him the best. He's a neighbor of mine.
So is that coming out here now, or is it only, 'cause it's out in Britain, right? The new one?
It's out here this weekend.
Is it what opens today?
Yeah.
I really ought to know these things, but I don't. All right. We'll talk to Scott Dowd. He's going to be on later today. We'll see if he's. I strongly suspect that he hasn't, but we'll. Because he's sort of a joke movie reviewer sometimes. I say that with all due respect, but he really does have a stronger grasp of home theatrical experience than of the actual cinematic experience sometimes. So the new Bond comes out today. Although the real question is going to be how our friend Siegfried feels about it, because he is sort of the Rick Emerson Show's foremost Bond expert.
Here's a movie that Scott has seen. Emilio Estevez transports audiences back in time in the historically based drama Bobby for limited release this weekend. Bobby centers around 22 people, yes, 22, here in the Ambassador Hotel when Senator Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated June 6, 1968. Estevez both wrote and directed the screenplay. He says he toured the Ambassador Hotel during the photo shoot inspired his film.
They took us down into the kitchen and into the pantry, which was behind these padlocked doors. And we walked in, and we stood there at the place where Bobby was shot and he fell. And it was hallowed ground. And you couldn't help but be moved.
sorry. I'm sorry. I was having a little bit of a diabetic shock there. I know. I know this is probably sacrilege to you, too, because he's a Kennedy, and therefore you love him, Tim. But I just...
I'm Catholic, and I'm from New England.
It has nothing to do with Kennedy. It has to do with... Exactly. It has to do with his friend, and it has to do with the way that celebrities are around anybody like that. And it's hallowed ground. Like, if anybody else said that, I might believe, but hearing it... And I know that he's an accomplished actor, and he's written a film, and his dad is Martin Sheen, and so forth. But hearing Emilio Estevez talk, and it's hallowed ground, it's just the whole thing just activates some sort of gag reflex with me.
Emilio Estevez says his memory of that fateful day is still vivid.
I remembered where I was the morning that Bobby was shot. I remembered being in Ohio in my grandmother's house, and I remember running upstairs and waking my father and telling him that Bobby had been shot. And I remember the looks on my parents' faces, and I remember... That 1968 was such a tumultuous year. It was the year that shook the world.
Where were you?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, well, I was. According, I was still in the. I was, as the Mormons would say, I was still in the pre-existence at that time. The thing about Bobby is, I was talking to somebody. See, we can say this now because Joshua Jackson is no longer in the room with us. It's not that it's a bad film. It's not a bad film at all.
It's okay.
That's exactly what it is.
There's nothing else playing.
If you've got time to kill, and the ticket is free. The thing about Bobby, I'm not trying to tell people not to see it. I'm sure you won't need my help with that. There's parts, and then there's a whole. There's things inside of other things.
This could have been about anything.
The whole is less than the sum of its parts, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. I mean, there's things that are really good. Joshua Jackson himself is really good. Yeah. He's good. What's his name? Nick Cannon, is that guy's name? The black guy who's like, I'm going to be Secretary of Transportation. He's good.
He's good.
I kind of enjoyed the wacky adventure of the two guys who drop acid, although I could have done
Shia
without...
Shia LaBeouf, I think. Yeah, he did a really good job.
Is he the guy with the glasses?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could have done without that sequence, which is in every Oliver Stone film and every... Why is it that movies... We've been making movies since 1911 in this country. We can't find a different way to show an acid trip. Enough with the opening the door, and then there's some weird stock footage playing behind the door.
Well, there are some continuity problems, too, because the scene in the restroom where they're washing up, those sinks and faucets weren't invented yet.
Oh, and there was a lot of...
And the soap dispenser is like from 1980-something. And the kitchen, some of the canned goods weren't around in 1960.
And there was a lot of... And nothing comes to mind. I should have written it down at the time, but I didn't because I'm not a movie reviewer, Dick, and I don't really care. But there was some dialogue, too. Where it's especially between Martin Sheen and Helen Hunt. And boy, did Helen Hunt look like a million miles of bad road. This is like with the Sharon Stone question. I'm unclear about whether they made Helen Hunt look bad or whether she always looks bad and they just didn't bother to make her look good for this film. I do have to say, though, I am always a little impressed when celebrities are willing to let themselves look hideous. And Helen Hunt, mission accomplished. There's this whole sequence where Martin Sheen, and this is the other problem with the film, is that A, it plays like sort of a substandard crash to me. B, maybe it's just from watching The West Wing, but I suspect that when Emilio Estevez was writing dialogue for Martin Sheen, he wrote all the dialogue as though Martin Sheen was playing Jed Bartlett on The West Wing. That was the problem, where everything was sort of wry and witty. And there's a long conversation between Helen Hunt and Martin Sheen, where Helen Hunt, and I wish I'd remember what it was, but she used some phrase that people were really not using in 1968, and it wasn't like she said, like, I'm chilling to the max or something, but it was some phrase that it sort of juts out of the... And then
she was called a hoe.
Do you need to wash up your grill before we... And then there's this, and then there's that thing that they do in movies like this, where, and it is the mark, I believe, of an immature filmmaker, where they cannot resist doing this. They can't, in historical films, sometimes they cannot resist this. Almost Famous even has one of these moments, and Almost Famous is a very nearly almost flawless film. Do you remember the scene, have you seen Almost Famous? The Cameron Crowe film about the kid that goes on the road with the rock band?
No.
Okay, well, there is this sequence where he's on the road with a band, and he's talking to Rolling Stone magazine, because he's reporting for Rolling Stone. And he's got the story in front of him in, like, bits and scraps of paper, and it's in 1970. And he's got to get the story to the Rolling Stone office. And again, the movie takes place in 1973. He calls the Rolling Stone office, and the guy at Rolling Stone is like, okay, well, you'll need to take your pages down to the our office in New York, and you can send it to us over the Mojo Wire. And the kid says, well, what's a Mojo Wire? And the guy says, in this movie taking place in 73, the guy says, it's a revolutionary new machine that sends pages over telephone wires. It only takes 90 minutes a page. And then everybody in the audience goes, oh, it's an anachronism. That's what they do in Bobby. There's a beginning where there's a guy, there's this long sequence of a guy, a campaign worker, explaining the new ballot. And he said, and you want to be careful of these dangling bits of paper, or what the guys in the design department call hanging chads. And then everybody in the theater giggles because, see, because that caused trouble later on. It's a decent film.
It wasn't the way it was.
I was there, mister. You don't know how it was in the summer of love.
We weren't allowed to watch it that day.
Oh, really?
My mother turned on the channel with a Mr. Rogers special.
You weren't allowed to watch the Kennedy thing?
Yeah, I mean, back in 1968 when it happened.
Oh, really?
If there were kids in the house, usually the parents tried to find something else that was on TV. So there was a Mr. Rogers special on, and we watched it for like several hours.
Are you bitter that you don't have that? You're not able to go like, I remember where I was when.
Well, I've seen the footage so many times that I can think it's like the Zapruder film that I was there when I saw it, even though it didn't happen back.
Well, totally. Well, it's like the thing. Okay, we were talking to Jargon. We were speaking with Joshua Jackson outside the theater that night. I was talking about even I, and again, I was 5 years before I was even born. I can recite whole chunks of that Bobby Kennedy speech where he goes, and now it's on to Chicago and let's win there. And then he does the peace symbol and then he gets shot down. I can recite whole chunks. It's almost like I was there. Never, but I wasn't. I don't know anything about it. So
you've just seen it so many times.
By the way, the one final note, and the last thing I'll say about this movie, Bobby. The worst part of the entire film, the worst part, and again, it's not a bad film. There are things about it that is good, but the worst part. Boy, there's nothing worse than when a filmmaker tries to write like a big, inspiring, metaphor-laden speech, and then it just is retarded. And so there's this sequence, I swear to God, this sounds like a joke, but where Lawrence Fishburne, he's...
Are you talking about the king?
He's,
that thing?
Well, there's that, where he...
That just made me so uncomfortable.
Where he writes this thing on the wall, this graffiti on the wall about, like, you know, little man, you will become a king or whatever, which is some stuff that really... Now, that... See, here's the thing, is that really was written on the wall of that kitchen, but nobody knows why. There's this thing where there's a picture of a crown and then a phrase like, you know, blah, 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 this man shall become a king or whatever. It's from King Arthur. That really was written in the kitchen, but no one in real life knows why, but Emilio Estevez, I have to write a glowing, flowery backstory for it. And then, there is this sequence where I swear to God, Lawrence Fishburne is trying to describe the civil rights struggle in America by using blueberry cobbler. And he's talking about blueberry cobbler and trying to use it as a metaphor for the struggle of, like, black and Latino peoples in America for rights.
And then everyone plays up to their stereotypes.
Oh, seriously.
Oh, God.
You're serious? Look at me. I am a fiery, hot-headed Latino. Look at me. I am a sage black man. I mean, and it's all like, and I'm in the audience going, look at me. I'm in the worst film I've ever seen, you know? And it's all, God. Yeah, it's, I'm not the, that moment was awful. All right. Here's Tim Riley. Good God.
Well, gather the kids around for the story of gay penguins in school. A picture book about two male penguins raising a baby penguin is getting a chilly reception along with some parents in Illinois. They worry about the book's availability to children and the reluctance of school administrators to restrict access to it. The concerns are the latest involving And Tango Makes Three, the illustrated children's book based on the true story of two male penguins in New York City Central Park Zoo that adopted a fertilized egg and raised a chick as their own. This sounds like a boring story anyway. Their request, move the book to the library's regular shelves and restrict it to a section of mature issues, perhaps even requiring parental permission for a child to check it out.
I don't want my kids hearing about penguins and eggs. They're just not ready.
Lily Del Pinco thought the book looked charming when her 5-year-old daughter brought it home in September. Del Pinco said she was halfway through reading it to her daughter when the zookeeper said the two penguins must be in love. Well, that's when I ended the story.
I'm not going to have my kid reading anything about love. No child of mine will know about love.
The book is that created a similar flaps elsewhere earlier this year. Two whole parents, voiced concern about the book with librarians in the Missouri town of Savannah.
It must be nice to live in a place where really your biggest concern is not crime, drugs, gangs, your kid being diddled out back by a priest with his frock pulled up. Your biggest concern is your kid reading about penguins who happen to be in love. I don't want my kid. Next thing you know, what am I going to do when my kid starts molting? What am I going to do, I ask you?
Here's Tim Riley.
Mike Tyson will become a prostitute. Champion boxing champion Mike Tyson is to become a male escort after agreeing to work at legendary Hollywood mansion Heidi Fleiss's new legalized brothel for women. Fleiss bought 60 acres of land in Nevada, and his work is scheduled to begin at Heidi's stud farm. She has high hopes for Tyson, once heavyweight champ of the world, despite the fact that he's a convicted rapist. She says, I told him, you're going to be my big stallion. It's every man's fear that their girlfriend would go for Mike Tyson. Tyson is 40 abs. I don't care what any man says. It's every man's dream to please every woman and get paid for it.
There's just so much that's wrong about this story and so much that's right. Can I see that story for just a second?
It's a bit unbelievable.
It can't be real. I mean, it just can't. This has got to be one of those stories.
It's been in almost every tabloid.
It has to be fake. This has got to be one of those stories that we report is real, and then later it'll be like, I have no idea where this story came from. I find this to be reprehensible on all levels. I mean, this is like as a show for a week. I mean, he doesn't need to prep anything else. Tom just needs to walk in with this story every day. And I love the you're going to be my big stallion. And the idea that it's somehow every man's fear that their girlfriend will go for Mike Tyson, I worry about that constantly. I've just taken actually to chaining my wife up and to manacling her to the bed for fear that she'll go down to Las Vegas and hump Mike Tyson. All right. Yeah, well, there you go. Picture what it must sound like for Mike Tyson to be having sex with your wife. And there we go. All right, here's Tim Riley.
The Dutch government has announced plans today for legislation banning full-length veils in public places and other clothing that covers the face, putting the Netherlands at the forefront of a general European hardening toward Muslim minorities. The Netherlands, once considered one of Europe's most welcoming nations for immigrants and asylum seekers, is deeply divided over moves by the government to stem the tide of arrivals, which compel immigrants to assimilate into Dutch society. The cabinet finds it undesirable that face-covering clothing, including the burqa, are worn in public places for reason of public order. There are a whole bunch of Muslims there, but only a few hundred wear this piece of apparel.
Seriously, in no country where the shoes are made out of bits of tree, I don't think they have any business telling anybody else what's right and wrong. I know that everything has to evolve from something else, but wooden shoes are just stupid. Here's Tim Ryan.
I think that's basically a tourist thing.
Is that not real?
Well, I mean, way back when it was, but as a matter of daily activities, a Dutch man or woman would not be wearing wooden shoes. There are other options.
Remember in the wintertime, it's just wooden boots.
Right.
All right. Here's Tim Riley.
Let's do a Geek Watch.
Here's your Geek Watch for whatever the hell day this is. Friday.
This high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn shit. You got it?
Energize.
There will be no Harry Potter book this year, and that cost Indigo Books and Music dearly. Total sales with Canadian's largest bookstore fell 2.4% to $182 million for the fiscal second quarter, largely because there were no Harry Potter books to sell. The popular children's hero was not the only fly in Indigo's financial ointment, but it certainly was a factor. As expected, the timing of the Harry Potter release negatively impacted revenues of all channels for Indigo for the second quarter.
And by the way, I should say that also on the Harry Potter front, two things. A, if you look at the purple section of USA Today, this is the first look at Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
Have you seen the first poster?
No. Is it cool?
Yeah, it's scary looking.
Oh, really? Order of the Phoenix is the best book so far, in my opinion.
It has the guy... It's been so long since I've read it. It seems like forever since we've had a Harry Potter movie or book.
Yeah, I know. Well, we had a Goblet of Fire that came out last year.
The guy on the front with no face.
And then Half-Blood Prince is going to come out in like a year and a half. But I saw some stills from Order of the Phoenix, which looks fantastic. This is not part of the Geek Watch because this just happened, actually. That apparently now Amazon.com and I think Barnes & Noble, the physical stores, the brick and mortar stores, are now taking orders for Harry Potter 7. You can now, I believe, and I may be wrong about this, but I believe as of today, you can order Harry Potter 7, the final... Harry Potter book at like 40% off, which means the great thing about that is that means that the title is imminent. That means that any week now we're going to hear about the title for Harry Potter year 7. So there you go. And so forth. There's your geek watch for thank you.
By Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Warband, I shall avenge you.
Next. Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
An Arinda man, I guess this is in California, was indicted by a federal grand jury yesterday on charges he threatened to subject a man having an affair with his wife to electric shocks until his eyes burst right out of the sockets. In an email in September, Paul Andrew Silva, who's 38, threatened to tie the man down and use exposed wires from a wall to shock you repeatedly until you cook from inside out and your eyes burst right out of the sockets.
Oh, it's good to have a plan.
Another email included a photograph showing a person whose head was split wide open. Silva was charged with 3 counts of making threats in interstate commerce and 1 count of telecommunications device harassment.
I dispute that anybody could be shocked until your eyeballs fell out. I believe that is specious logic and reasoning at best. Let's do one more here, and then we will take a break.
David Blaine is getting into the spine zone.
Oh, God.
Spin zone, I'm sorry.
That guy.
The gigantic contraption suspended over New York's Times Square won't be part of Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade. It's Stuntmaster David Blaine in his latest challenge. Escaping from a locked spinning gyroscope 50 feet above the ground, he hopes to extricate himself by Thanksgiving. He says it'll be a piece of cake, but we'll see.
See, here's the thing about David Blaine. This is what...
Too bad it's not a giant ball of...
A rubber band. Too bad it's just not a cage filled with Wolverines that are out of their minds on angel dust. I'd watch that. Here's the thing about David Blaine is no one cares because he hasn't ever died. He's never come close to dying. And when he says he's come close to dying, nobody believes him.
He's got to take 100 underprivileged kids shopping at a Target store.
Is that really true?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, whatever.
That's sweet.
What was the last thing that happened? I'm all wrinkly. Well, who cares?
Oh, that was when his skin was falling off inside of that big
like a
glass
snake ball. Yeah, but I mean, you know, whatever. You're wrinkly. Shut your hole. You know, no one cares. I want to see David Blaine. I wish him a long life and the best of health. I really do. But I'm saying to make this exciting, he's got to have a trick go wrong and get like seriously maimed at least once. And then everybody's, you know what it is? Here's the thing. This is what nobody else is. You know this is true. David Blaine is like the space shuttle program. It gets to be commonplace because nothing ever goes wrong.
And his tiles fall off.
He needs to have an O-ring come right out of him. he needs to explode. This is gone. This has all gone badly. I was just going to say that I remember when the space shuttle program became an everyday sort of a thing. But it does seem like...
They're American heroes, aren't they?
It does seem like having an explosion every 5 or 6 years really does inject a whole air of excitement into the thing that was perhaps not there before.
That's a future Emilio Estevez movie.
the day that stuff blew up. That's every 5 or 6 years, the day that an icon, you know, the day that, like, insert iconic American figure was brought to a tragic end, blah, 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 featuring quirky cast of, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just saying, if Blaine were to lose a hand or something, then we'd all watch the next special. Do you know what I mean? That's what we need. Is it a good injuring? Maybe lose an eye? You know, maybe he gets part of his hair pulled out of the root. Then whatever he does next, then I'll watch it. But only if it's live. And only if there's whirling blades of some kind. All right, let's take a break here. We'll come back. More around the corner. We've got Ed McCarthy, who stations outside among a gaggle of geeks at a Best Buy. Let's see. At the bottom of the next hour, we have more from the Ministry of Truth. We'll talk very briefly to Dennis Pittenbarger. We're going to find out a way to punish a guy's brother. And later on, Scott Daly will be in the studio to explain that he's seen nothing this week to review. It's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Stay there.